using the case, as a judge indicated after she ruled Adam had to go free because the FBI admitted that it relied on a jail. Adam was ultimately successful once the government dropped its case in order to preserve its power to do this. And he lives in freedom, I'm happy to say, right now in Rwanda.
We have 30 seconds. What has surprised you most about what is happening today?
Very little at this point, I'm sorry to say, surprises me. But the general indifference by the American political and intellectual elites to the relationship between the war on terror and the erosion of democracy is also a very deep thread and very historically rooted, not just in the war on terror, but before. And certainly seeing that those connections have to be made in order to have any form of real democracy in this country and safety and dignity for so many people.
Spencer Ackerman, I want to thank you so much for being with us. Pulitzer Prize-winning national security reporter, his new book, Reign of Terror: How the 9/11 Era Destabilized America and Produced Trump. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much.
One day, when the glory comes, it will be ours. It will be ours. Oh, one day, when the war is won, we will be sure.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. Due to the temporary closure of in-station activity at KBOO, meetings will be conducted online via public video conferencing unless otherwise noted. A public link and phone number to attend the meetings are available on our website. The Development and Events Committee meets on the fourth Monday of the month at 4:30 p.m. Please visit our website at kboo.fm to verify if a meeting is being held.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Whiplash, Thursday, August 26th from 6:30 to 9:30 p.m. at Flight 64 Studio in Portland. Whiplash is an exhibition of printmaking from the cooperative members of Flight 64. Again, that's Whiplash on Thursday, August 26th from 6:30 to 9:30 p.m. at Flight 64, 2934 Northeast Alberta Street B in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
This is KBOO Portland. It's 8:01 a.m. It's Friday. Stay tuned for The Gap on your community connection, KBOO Portland.
Girls, we run this. Dick. Girls, we run this. Dick. Girls, we run this. Dick. Girls, we run this.
Listening to KBO Portland. This is The Gap. How are you going? How are you doing? How are you feeling? I'm Tammy. With me is the lovely Althea. Hello, Althea.
Hi. I'm trying to catch my breath from laughing because I watched Tammy throw a pen across the room in excitement about that song. So
yeah, you gotta get it how you can. You know. Also, just a word. Use your turn signal. Just a word to people, the good people driving around right now. Use your turn signal. It's there for a reason. Communicating is good.
Mm-hmm.
Over-communicating sometimes also fine.
Also, I remember I used to be like insecure as when I like learned to drive. I was like, oh, I started my turn signal too early.
No, it's good. Let everyone know. Yeah, I'm behind you with a vehicle
just
that could
embarrassed.
Possibly hurt all of us. So
life
just,
is embarrassing. Just put your turn signal on early. It's okay.
And speaking of doing things that you're supposed to and keeping us on the air, hello, Sonia, and thank you so much for all of your work. How's
good
it going?
Morning.
Hope you're well. Per usual on The Gap, we have the show split into two parts. On the first part, which is now, we're going to be talking a bit about what is happening from Afghanistan. Of course, it's on the news. It's kind of hard to not be aware of what's happening, but we wanted to focus the conversation a little bit more about what is happening specifically to women there and some of the fears that they have, which in my opinion are totally justified now that the Taliban had decided to move in after the U.S. pullout. And then for the second part, we're going to be talking about doing the community question and getting your opinions, and the subject is going to be around sustainability. So for the first part, we can just dive right in. Like I mentioned, the U.S. pullout from Afghanistan started a little while ago, and over the weekend, in pretty much like record time, Taliban has come to power. The President Ashraf, is not there. The Afghan security forces surrendered to the Taliban, and now women are living in fear of their lives. The main reason that there's so much fear is because before the U.S. invasion to Afghanistan, women were living under Taliban rule and were subjugated to, torture, forced marriages. Of course, a lot of them were very, very young. And the Muslim law that ruled the land was Sharia law. And a lot of them are just very scared to be living under that version that the Taliban is bringing there. Also, we were doing a little bit of research beforehand, and we found that the median age for people living in Afghanistan is 18.
Yeah.
And the U.S. Armed Forces has been there for 20 years.
Yeah, it's a much younger population. Compare that to, like, the United States, which, granted, we have an aging population, but our median age is, like, 38.
So these women, these children, men too, have been living for the last 20 years under a more liberal, lenient, lifestyle, and now a lot of fear. We're seeing at the airport what's happening. People are fleeing for their lives. People are, we went from having, I don't want to get too graphic, but from, one person and jumping from the Empire State, from the Twin Towers, just out of fear of what's happening, just basically, the falling man from the towers. And now we recently saw another man fall from a U.S. Plane, just trying to flee from their lives. It's just like the images are just absolutely like heart-wrenching and terrifying. And yeah, everyone's question is like, what happened? What's going on? And we have a short clip, a couple of minutes long, from Afghan women talking about their activism, but also what life under the Taliban was and their fears for what it could be. And we are getting reports that there are protests happening, as well as violence taking place. So, a lot of these fears that the Taliban went on air and they were saying, oh, no, women are going to have equal rights. They're going to be working shoulder to shoulder with men. Women should not be scared. The people of Afghanistan should not be scared. But we are seeing pretty quickly that is just not the case. People are terrified and people are being murdered. So we do have a couple of minutes of just Afghan women speaking out to international media. So whenever, Sonia, you got it, you can go ahead and play that clip.
Concerned about the situation in Afghanistan right now, especially about the safety of women and girls there. I had the opportunity to talk to a few activists in Afghanistan, including women's rights activists, and they are sharing their concern that they are not sure what their life is going to be like. A lot of them remember what was happening in the 1996 till 2001 time, and they're deeply worried about their safety, their right, their protection. They're worried about their access to school. And we have already seen news reports that many girls have been sent back from university. A lot of them have been asked to get married. Biden has a lot to do. President Biden has to take a bold step for the protection of the people of Afghanistan.
We use football as a means of activism to stand for our right, to stand, have a strong stand against Taliban, to say to Taliban that we are strong women of Afghanistan. No matter how many of our sisters you are killing, you will never shut the voices of women. We are standing with our sisters. But we announced it, and all these beautiful, amazing young girls put their faces and stood strong, very vocal against Taliban. Today, what they are seeing when they look outside, their enemies outside their door. They are so afraid. They are worried. They are scared. Not only the players, but also the activists. So what I'm doing all these years of my life as one of the pioneers or founder of the Afghanistan national team, and have been being involved so much in development of Afghanistan women's football. Today, I'm calling them and telling them, take down their names, remove their identities, take down their photos for their safety. Even I'm telling them to burn down or get rid of your national team uniform. And that is painful for me, for someone as an activist who stood up and did everything possible to achieve and earn that identity as a national women's national team player, to earn that badge on the chest, to have the right to play and represent our country. How much we were proud. What we are seeing is a country collapsing. All the pride, the happiness to be there, to empower women and men of the country, is just like, it was just wasted. All those achievements, all those dreams is just faded.
As an Afghan female, of course, this is something the Taliban are against. The Taliban war is against women. They don't want a woman to be educated. They take away the rights from the woman. The first thing they do, they take away everything from a woman. The same thing. I was the symbol of freedom of women in Afghanistan as a woman that I raised my voice and tried to go against what they believe. And unfortunately, it ended up risking my life and my family's life. And I have been threat so many times by them. My brother got shot by them. And it's just really, really scary situation for any woman to be in. And now, right now, and I'm thinking about what every Afghan females are going through, every little girls, women in Afghanistan are going through. They must be really scared for their life. I have been watching videos. I cannot like take my mind away. I have been watching the news nonstop, and my heart is in pain, watching the girls screaming that I will get killed, please take me away. Or, you know, it's really, really scary that all the women has to think like this, because they know what the future is going to look like for them.
I spoke to a Taliban spokesman a couple of days ago, and he said to me that the Taliban have changed, that they believe that women should be educated. He said that they could go to university. He said that women could work. He also said that women didn't need to wear the burqa walking around Afghanistan. Do you believe him?
I do not. I do not believe that. The people that they already proved themselves, how the world is easy, believe them already that they have changed. They're the same people. Already in Kabul, you see no sign of any woman. Any pictures of a woman in the stores and the walls, it has been already blacked out. There's no woman in the city. One woman already got killed because she didn't have a burqa on. How can I even trust that word? How the world can trust that word?
You just got word that was a couple of clips stitched together. We heard Malala, of course. Everyone is familiar. She was shot by Taliban while protesting for women's education. Then was Khalida Popad, who is the captain, or was the captain, of the Afghanistan national football or soccer team. And lastly was Niloufar Rahami, who was one of the first women fixed-wing pilot in the Afghan Air Force. And that was them just kind of giving their lived experience on what their fears are. Althea, do you have any, what are your opinions around this and after hearing that?
Yeah, I mean, it's chilling, you mm-hmm. know? And I think that it's important to hear it because a lot of like what I've heard talked about and covered, at least in US media, in the past week or so, is like, how did it all go so wrong, you know? And trying to break it down from a geopolitical perspective. And definitely there is some like pressure to bring in refugees and like make sure that the immigration process is workable, which, you know, from what we've seen, it's not like holding up to that, and that the strategy obviously was like not supportive of Afghan people who like faced great risk once the Taliban were to retake power. But I think it's like important to center what does this actually mean for people that are there, mm-hmm. not just kind of like the navel gazing of like, oh, the U.S. military industrial complex mm-hmm. and Biden, what the heck? Why didn't you listen to your generals, man? Like, this is embarrassing. It's like, I mean, it is, but it's also, it's like life or death now, mm-hmm. you know? And thinking about, like, we talked about the median age being like 18 years old, and thinking about 20 years and that 20 years of people, of women getting to go to school and like growing up largely without Taliban rule, and that's not just like people who are younger than the age of 20. Like if you're under 30, under mm-hmm. 35, like the majority of your life has been spent that way. And you know, your formative core memories are about, you know, going to university and pushing for like gender equity and stuff like that. It's a dark moment, and that the commitments ring hollow, you know. Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, no, we'll be cool with women. We definitely won't like kidnap them or execute them if they've ever been sexually assaulted. But mm-hmm. Actions speak louder than words.
And we're seeing those actions unfold. And in some of the footage from the from the protests, they were, you know, someone was quoted to say that this isn't the same Afghanistan of the 90s, in that they are not going to surrender so quickly to a life of incredible oppression and violence, and they're protesting on the street. I mean, I can't believe. I can believe, but it's just it's. I would be so terrified, you know, just like terrified. You know, these people have taken, what was it, I have here in my notes, like $38 billion worth of supplies supplies and arms cachet that was given to the security forces there, you know, from like machine guns to helicopters, and that stuff is still there, you know. I don't know if it's all in like working condition and all of that, but all that is still there. So it's like a terrifying notion to know that these men largely want to rule these people in a way that's so violent, and they're still going out to street not armed with anything besides like the flag of their nation mm-hmm. and courage that is incredible. There isn't, you know, the police isn't there to stop it, mm-hmm. you know, it's not like they'll have someone to turn to, and they're just doing it. There is also a story of a governor in one of the districts in Afghanistan, Salima Mazari, and she decided, she was saying that the people and like her, you know, her people that she governs, they took some of their sheep and livestock, and they went and they got guns, and they were protecting whatever, you know, little district that they have in the mountains. And long story short, the Taliban ended up taking her. And what do you think they, you know, happens to a woman who's in that, you know, a governor position? It's just like really heartbreaking to know what might ensue. And again, this is all like based on the Taliban that we have been familiarized with, you know, prior to the invasion and then throughout. So, I mean, while they say that they have changed their ways, only time can tell. And so far, time is showing that that's all lies. Mm. And I just want, like, how can, you know, after being born into freedom, how like, how can you go back to a life that's not yours, you know? Maybe it is for them because they were around beforehand. And honestly, I'm looking at the pictures. A lot of them look very young. But how can you even go back after living life, you know, to be basically a walking dead, you know? It's just mm-hmm. like... I and the protests are happening, and I really want to emphasize that. And it's not easy. It's not like for us to, you know, go down the street and protest, which sure there's a lot of, like, you know, nuance that we can get into that. But the fact that it is a you know, protected activity. So it's just like, wow. So I'm seeing, you know, we're going to keep seeing this unfold. And, you know, of course, the politicians are going to politic while the people are going to do what the people do, and that's the people's will, hopefully. But yeah, this is incredible. Incredible.
Yeah, and I think it's also, like, I don't know, I was reading some of the statistics about, you know, people who have been granted a refugee status or people who aided the Americans while they were occupying Afghanistan, that it's majority men, and so, like, the refugee process has, like, highly favored Afghan men as opposed to women, and there's, like, news reports of women, like, deleting all of their social media, like, burning or tearing up any documents that are in English and, like, burying their cell phones. Sonia?
All right. if Afghanistan under U.S. occupation was so free for women, why were so few women employed as translators and guides and so on? If it's you're saying it's majority men who, you know, and then here's this, we have this whole process from the U.S. I'm guessing via the Pentagon and or the State Department to expedite refugee visas and refugee status for the people doing these jobs, and even within the people doing these jobs, they're centering men. Maybe the U.S. presence in Afghanistan wasn't really centered on women at all, ever, at any time. And so all this hand-wringing about, oh, but what about the safety of women, like, without the U.S. there, seems really disingenuous and self-serving.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that it's, like, black and white at all, that, like, the U.S., you know, occupation was 1,000% better in every regard, right? But I think it is, you know, more indicative to point to, like, the international community that are, like, you know, oh, we're gonna, like, condition aid on this. But I don't know what, like, I'm not a, you know, foreign policy expert to dream up the situation in which you protect women and girls going forward. But I think it's, like, you know, a real callousness, even though, you know, like, the UN, that's one of their, like, top priorities, so they say, is that creating, you know, gender equity, gender equality is what helps developing nations become more developed and to, you know, like, build their wealth, that kind of thing.
Yeah, right. Shutting down 50-something% of the population from having any meaningful role in the development of a nation does not advance that nation's development.
Yeah, and I mean, I think it's also just, like, false to say that, like, oh, the U.S., you know, left in a rush and did a really bad job, but they protected Afghan men. Like, they didn't do that either. Even translators, people who, interpreters who helped them, don't have it, like, easy by any means.
No, but the ones who are getting any protection at all, as you say, are overwhelmingly men.
Yeah.
Unless I misunderstood.
Yeah, they employed mostly, like, male interpreters from my understanding, which, again, we're talking about, like, over the course of 20 years.
Yeah.
Gender disparity.
And, of course, it's like, it makes sense that in a more patriarchal society that you're trying to, you know, build up, the people you're trying to meet with might not take you as seriously if there's some woman interpreting for you, right? And so there's that line where between meeting people where they're at and then versus modeling where you're trying to get to. And so in 20 years, you've got grown adults who weren't born yet when you arrived. What are you doing that you can't make any demonstrable, measurable, visible progress on that front in 20 years?
Yeah, I mean, I can't like speak to the entirety of it, but like, I think it's about, you know, what kind of lasting change can be made, you know, and like, so many women have been educated and become doctors and midwives and like been able to advance themselves academically over the course of U.S. rule, which isn't to like, you know, get hyped up on imperialism or anything, but it's like demonstrably better for women.
And again, this is them speaking, not, you know, us assuming.
Right.
Also, this is straight from the people who have experienced this or lived through it. And so, yeah, so it's not, so I'm just a little bit of at a loss there. But going back to the median age of 18, that's a median age for just people, you know, so that, and again, it's like, you know, you got to take into consideration people who have accessibility of being signed up, you know, into the survey of how old you are and all that stuff. And that is very, very young. That is so, it's such like a fragile age, in my opinion, to have to have been traumatized and having to, or to become traumatized now. And I mean, some of those footages, especially in the beginning days when we saw a lot of the videos, it was mostly men that I've noticed. I would be able to count like one or two women because of just like the garb. And I was really worried because I'm like, where are all the women? You know, like this is, who's, you know, what's going on? And I was like, maybe it was like a women and children first type of operation, but as more detail.
It was take out the biggest military planes first, and then maybe we'll bring some people along.
The more that we found out. And then this is also, just speaking of the videos, it's also, this is another one of these times where we are able to see things from a different point of view and not just rely on like media coverage, because mm-hmm. people do have these videos and they're circulating them on WhatsApp, and you know, it is getting to the main stage. So, you know, just the fact that social media has another role to play in this is, you know, the footage is like so grim and so raw. And again, it's developing, and there are protests, and there is violence ensuing these protests. But we, you know, will be covering this. Of course, the whole world is watching. So, I wonder if, I don't know, something comes out of all of this that can in some way be like considered positive, or at least, you know, moving towards something where the people's will can be, you know, willed.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, but with that, we're going to take a very, very quick musical break, and then mm-hmm. we will be back for part two of the show. This is The Gap. You're listening to KBOO Portland.
And what we're seeing in Afghanistan is the end result of progress being imposed on a traditional society at the point of a gun.
Thank you.
You are listening to KBOO Portland. This is The Gap. We were just listening to Boche Kabul by, Ariana Saeed. Oh, my goodness. Sorry about that. She's one of those, like pop stars. Yeah. And so the music video is very sweet. And it translates to Boy from Kabul. So it's like a little sweet little love ballad. Thought it was would be appropriate. Just wanted to put that out there. Sure. Yes. And like I said, you're listening to The Gap. We're here in part two of the program where we take, where we have a community question. We pose it and we take your calls for the listeners. And Althea, what is this week's community question?
Yeah, this week we want to talk to you about sustainability. So a week or two ago, the IPCC report came out from the UN and demonstrated that, you know, human-created climate change is way more severe than previously thought, and, like, you know, moved up those deadlines essentially about when it is too late to take action. And obviously a lot of that environmental impact is because of mega corporations. You know, like the ocean was on fire like last month, and it's not individuals' fault, but, you know, nevertheless, we kind of want to talk about what individual people can do to reduce their waste and emissions, since, you know, the situation that we're in requires creativity at all levels. And I know folks that are, you know, terrestrial listeners, folks on the web, if you're out there, I know that you have great creativity when it comes to these things. So what do you do to be sustainable? What changes have you made in your life? Let us know by calling 503-231-8187.
What's your go-to sustainability? I know that you are big on the, you always have that thing, the carabiner? The very heavy water bottle that carry around.
Oh, yeah, my very heavy water bottle.
Yeah.
It also kind of doubles as an emergency weapon. Haven't had to do that yet, but I hope it makes me look tough. Yeah. I've had reusable water bottle, big fan. This one I'm very proud of. I've had for many years. Nothing more devastating than losing a water bottle covered in all your favorite stickers. I'm also definitely someone who saves every jar and container that I come across. There's an entire cabinet at my house that is it organized? That would be a question, and the answer would be no. So it's like a good 5 minutes if you want to find the right lid, but, you know, there's a container for everything, every shape you can imagine. I've got something for it. I'm ready for fresh cut flowers. I'm ready for leftovers. You want to take it home? You got it, you know?
I'm trying to think of any. Have you been, since Corona started, I've noticed that people have not been able to use their reusable stuff at, like, coffee shops and all.
Yeah.
And that's been kind of a bummer for people. I have a friend who has, like, containers of, like, for, like, to-go stuff at restaurants, and she'll just be like, here you go, please just put it in this box. Instead of using, those, like, brown boxes that have the nylon and stuff inside of it.
Yeah, like the wax coating. Yeah.
But she's not allowed to do that anymore. They won't do that for her anymore.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, even before the pandemic, if you were like, oh, I brought my, you know, reusable coffee cup, they're like, oh, or I would say, like, oh, can you fill my water bottle for me? They're like, okay, yeah, can you unscrew the top? And, like, you have to do it yourself, that kind of thing. But yeah, I think, like, getting in, it's weird to, like, break that habit. And I might have mentioned this on the show before, but a while back, I, like, traveled to Colorado, and at the Denver airport, this was very surprising to me, all of their, like, water fountains and drinking, like, even, you know, like, most airports have the thing where you can just, like, put your water bottle right there and it just fills it. It's not even like you're trying to manipulate the water fountain. They masked them all off. And I was, like, stuck at this, like, 9-hour delay at the Denver airport, like, so desperate that I, like, went to buy water at the airport to pour into my reusable water bottle. It was cyclical, which I don't think PDX was doing, so that's, like, why I was so surprised. But, you know, you got to stay hydrated when you're at the airport.
Especially the Denver airport. You know what they say about the Denver airport?
They say a lot of things about the Denver airport.
If none of it was true, why would it look the way it does? I'm trying to think of some of my sustainable. I think it's definitely, like, it sustains me, but I think from a, you know, I don't have a lot of money. And so I think that, like, sustainability kind of, I have to be sustainable. Not that, like, I don't want to or anything, but I don't view it as sustainable. I view it as, like, saving money almost.
Yeah.
Reusing things, shopping at secondhand shops, stores for clothes, hand-me-downs, you know, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
But one thing about, like, where I live in town, in the North Side, is that it's very bikeable. So I've been able to, you know, not drive as much and use my bike, which is great. But I didn't even realize that it does have, like, I'm actually, like, I noticed that I don't use as much gas, you know, when I, especially mm-hmm. recently when I've been biking more. And that's, you know, that's carbon, that's emissions, that's all this stuff. And yeah. I can, like, visibly see how much I'm not using,
right.
you know, because of how much of the, all the info that you have in the dashboard.
Mm-hmm.
So that's been kind of fun. And I don't take it, like, I don't take it very far. Like, I won't take all the way to the South Side or something. But it's, you know, I feel it, you
mm-hmm.
know. And also saving bags if I, you know, if I get bags. I save them everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Also double as, you know, if I need it for things or just mm-hmm. walking around. But yes, we would love to hear from you, the listener. And what kind of tips do you have to be sustainable? What do you do to be sustainable? Phone number to call is 503-231-8187. Again, 503-231-8187. And I know we have some pretty creative listeners out there. I know that I've used some tips that I heard on the show,
mm-hmm.
especially with how to combat the heat,
mm-hmm.
and it was very helpful, incredibly. I think, like, plants and stuff, you know, being able to, I know that you propagate plants a lot.
Oh,
you know?
Yeah. My roommate and I have gotten way into that. Yeah, once they go, they're going, you know? And here's the wild thing about plants, and I thought I knew about plants, by the way. If you cut them if you cut them a certain way, it's like, oh, that's a new plant.
Mm.
So let me tell you, great gift.
Great this is
great
true.
Gift for somebody.
This is true.
And also, you know, purifying the air. I got a downstairs neighbor that chain smokes.
Mm.
And for whatever reason, our apartment's air systems are like, it's like she's breathing it into my face sometimes. So it's good to have, you know, plants. I made myself a low-cost air filter with just, like, getting like, you know, an air filter for, like, I don't know, whatever your air system is, and then just putting that behind the fan.
Mm.
And boy, did that thing get dirty.
Oh, yeah, I bet.
Yeah. but, yeah, I'm also just thinking back now, because you were talking about biking, to, like, the first week of the pandemic,
mm-hmm.
and, like, that one of the reports that was coming out at that time, it's like, whoa, look at how, like, there's nobody on the road. Like, look at how the emissions have changed.
Mm-hmm. Oh, right. There was a lot of, like, a lot of the wildlife and, like, the reefs in, like, Hawaii were coming back to life because
yeah.
no one was messing with them.
Which is just wild because I think that, like, you know, when I was young and learning about climate change, right, like, there's always this, like, hypothetical of, like, what would it be like if, like, nobody was driving? It's like, whoa, we actually, like, got to try that out. I mean, poor timing because who could pay attention to it at that
right.
time? But
yeah.
Anyway, we do have a caller. Brian, how's it going?
Hello, good morning. It's going well. Thank you. I'm a KBOO member, want to say that. And I appreciate this call. You mentioned about sustainability, and I've been into it, and like you, for a long time. I got rid of my car 10 years ago. 20, 30 years ago, 40 years ago, I stopped, for the most part, taking bags. I probably saved 50,000 bags and do all of those things. But I also wanted to mention, when you brought up about things you could do, last night I happened to watch a video of Donella Meadows on sustainability and systems thinking. And she was one of the great thinkers and leaders on sustainability. If anybody ever, I mean, I just wanted to kind of really let the listeners know, somebody to check out. She used to write a column on it weekly. She wrote the book. She wrote the book about Limits to Growth. She was the lead author on the book Limits to Growth. It was written in like 1975 or something, which predicted that we can't be, you know, what we're doing is not sustainable and it's going to eventually collapse. And it was about 50 years out till that all happened, 60 years out, and now we see it. And systemic problems require systemic solutions.
Hmm.
And I don't know. I just wanted to say that, really. So I could end there and be done. But thank you for this subject. It's so important. Reduce, reuse, recycle. And the number one thing there, and that's the order to do it. You know, the first thing is reducing, living a simpler life, reducing your consumption needs. Mm-hmm. And that's the way to go. Thank you so much.
Yeah, appreciate you, Brian. Yeah, good points. I can link folks to Donella Meadows and her work on our show notes after the show, kbu.fm/thegap. But yeah, there's like, so I like the phrase systemic problems require systemic solutions.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, not all of the choices can be made by the consumer. But, you know.
And sometimes, I'm old. I remember when you'd go to the store and they give you a plastic bag, and now mm-hmm. it's like, never, no plastic bags here, ma'am.
Yeah.
And that shift happened like pretty quickly. And yeah, I think there's like, you know, there's a tax bag, so people are like, I you know, in growing up having like bringing your own tote bag, like my grandma would do that, and people would be like, what are you doing? You know, now it's like just very, very, you know, normative to do. Tote bags, love tote bags. Yeah. Oh, I love them.
Sometimes it's like if I go and I like, you know, I'm buying groceries or something outside of like a metropolitan area, and they like put it to me and they're like, do you want this bag? And I'm like, oh. But it's also like valuable to me, you mm-hmm. know. I'm like, I'm gonna make the most of this.
Mm.
I'm gonna wrap something up in my freezer with this, or I'm gonna help bag my garbage with this, to try to give it a second life. Yeah, and I hoard both paper and plastic bags. Not to say that I'm a good person, but I do hoard them. Do I put them in a safe area? No, I store them under the stove. So.
Oh, that's not safe.
Yeah, no, it's not.
Oh my goodness.
Is creating a fire hazard environmentally sustainable? Let's have that conversation.
Oh, jeez. Speaking of bags, another tip that I have that is sustainable and safe is using box, like cardboard boxes as trash bags, as trash cans, mm-hmm. and then you just line them with like, you know, whatever, like you can either put a brown paper bag in it or whatever you have, and then it's just, it lasts, and you know, it's fine, and then if it gets, you know, gross, then you can just recycle it.
Yeah.
And then that goes. Yes, but we would love to hear your sustainability practices. 503-231-8187.
I think there's a whole genre that I haven't like moved into yet, you know. Like I'm very much into saving things and reusing them, but I haven't quite gotten to like oh, maybe instead of buying a bottle of shampoo, you get a shampoo bar, or like maybe you don't need to buy like a new toothbrush that's like all plastic, you mm-hmm. know, stuff like that is not biodegradable. But I think that it's like, I think it's a good thing to talk about like what the low cost solutions are, just because like, you know, greenwashing and like,
yeah, I was gonna say there's a whole industry,
huge industry,
sustainable plastic, what?
Yeah, or like to make
right
to
yeah.
make you feel good about yeah. it, but it's also like, and even like stuff that may be legit is like priced up, mm-hmm. you know, and so, you know, you get to the grocery store and you're like, okay, well, I wanted to do the right thing here, but it's more expensive and now it feels weird.
Yeah, I have that dilemma all the time. Mm-hmm. Constant, again, like I said, I don't got much money right now, and it's pretty it's like kind of I gotta pick like, oh, what am I gonna go with? Mm-hmm. So there are like different ways of, and like the caller just said, you know, systemic problems call for systemic solutions, and like you were just saying, this is it's larger than just an individual level, mm-hmm. but there is individual responsibility that that we can all take, or action, you know, individual action mm-hmm. that we can all take. And yes, that's I like that you like the trash bag, the trash can idea, because
mm-hmm.
I have it under my sink right now, and it's working.
Nice. That's that's what we do with like our recyclables.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also weird because like I grew up in Seattle, and like it was like drilled into me of like compost and recycling, mm-hmm. what you can and can't do. And if I like go back home and my mom sees me like do it wrong, she'll be like, what are you doing? Stop that. Put it back the other way. But like where I live, there's no compost.
Mm-hmm.
They're still at like the food waste phase.
Mm.
And so like in my brain, I've been like debating how to get there for myself. And I think my roommate like freezes her food waste, which is cool. But yeah, that there's like that extra step that it's not like supported. It's like, oh, I need to do that eventually.
Right.
If I were a good person, I would. See, but now I'm guilt tripping myself.
Well, there's also a matter of like, do you have the space to compost? You know, mm-hmm. like, it's, yeah, I mean, there's, you have to, if you don't have the means for it, then yeah, you're going to have to get real creative, mm-hmm. you know? And I know we have some pretty creative listeners. 503-231-8187 is the number to tell us about your sustainability practices, especially if you have some low-cost ones.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just because it's low-cost doesn't mean that it doesn't have a big impact, you know? Right,
exactly.
Can be pretty big.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I would love to hear more, because I mean, as much as there's, like, the ones that are in my knowledge, I know that there's even more stuff out there that I could be doing. Yeah, especially with one thing I've been thinking about recently is like clothes and consumption in that regard, and that even because like thrifting became kind of trendy, there's like been overconsumption in that like realm as well. And like, I mean, keep the cycle going, obviously, like if it's not broke, get it back into circulation, get it to somebody else, but taking it all the way to, you know, like clothing is repairable. One thing I heard, sorry, this is like only halfway related, that wood is nearly infinitely repairable. I can't get that out of my head. Now I want to build furniture. We got Laura on the phone. Hi, Laura.
Hello.
How you doing?
Good. I had a few ideas about sustainability.
Please.
I gave up my car in September, so
wow.
That saved me a bunch of money. Plus, I'm not making random trips to the store and buying things on impulse, so that saved a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And also, I joined Buy Nothing on Facebook. I don't know if you're familiar with that.
I got a friend who's on there. What's that like?
Neighborhoods are so generous. You wouldn't believe the things that people are giving away. Even their services, if somebody needs something hauled or a ride somewhere. So that's been really helpful.
Have you gotten anything off of the Buy Nothing group or given anything?
Oh my gosh.
Yeah?
I started to keep a log, and I filled up, you know, a whole notebook page in two columns. And it's just crazy how much I've received, anywhere from clothes to food, furniture. I've hardly had to buy anything in the past year. And also right now it's harvest season, and there's just fruit everywhere. And you can find people that are giving away pears and plums and, you know, all kinds of fruit. So that's something else that I've benefited from.
Wow.
And also, you were mentioning about soaps and shampoos and stuff. There's a store that just opened up on Stark Street, and you can bring your own containers, and they sell everything, apparently. I have not been there yet, but all kinds of household supplies and just, you know, a whole store full of things that... So that's something to check out. It's supposed to be all organic and so forth.
That's cool.
It's very neat.
Might have to check that out. Thank you, Laura.
Well, you're welcome.
Have a great rest of your day. Thanks. Stay sustainable. We got Edie on the line. Hi, Edie. How's it going?
Good morning. I could spend many hours just listing, not even describing, the things that I do individually, and many more hours what one could do with more money or resources.
Mm-hmm.
And it's important that we do those individual things, because we need to live lives of integrity, and it gives us hope and get us out of denial that there's a problem.
Mm-hmm.
And it can connect us with other people. If everyone does a little bit, it can add up, but it doesn't add up as much as the systemic problems. While we had fewer people driving, we had fewer trucks delivering things, the greenhouse gases went up because there was more fracking, because there's more drilling. And so we need to counter the fossil fuel and the military and the captive animal industry and the deforestation. And as many trees as I can plant, as many times as I can sit in a tree individually, and it's all important, I'll continue doing it. What we really need to do is change the corporate and governmental military practices. Something is sustainable if it's good for the climate and for the earth, and it's sustainable if it is social justice. It's sustainable if it is motivated by and inspires love, and it's not sustainable if it's motivated by and results in more fear. And just as in Afghanistan, all wars are bad for girls and women because powerful armed men traffic, rape, torture, terrorize them, as the Americans did in Afghanistan and Iraq around the world. And right now it's not sustainable to have the man camps, the fossil fuel industry, traffic girls, women, and tooth fairy on native land in order to get frack gas, shale oil, etc., to our sands. But we also need to be careful we're not fooled, because in Oregon there's plans to have a big lithium mining. Oh, so we can have rich people to have their Prius or whatever, electric car batteries. That is not sustainable. It is not fair. It is not humane. And in Afghanistan, stealing all those precious metals for some high tech and bombing a pathway for the gas lines in the Caspian is not sustainable. It's not fair. And one way we stand up for women everywhere is that we stand up this weekend to the white supremacist armed fascists who come in with their pickup trucks and guns, their flags, just like ISIS, and are terrorizing Portland and houseless people. We don't give out houseless people tickets and police attacks. We don't give them out plastic bottles. We bring 5-gallon jugs of water and the 55-gallon tubs and pickup trucks that can, with a clean hose, deliver lots of water in one place with a spigot, so there's no garbage as an excuse for the neighbors and the police to come down. And we have sustainability by providing housing, by interfering with the profiteering off of houselessness, invisible suffering. And because we have over 16 to 20 times houseless housing or peopleless housing units than we have houseless people. So we have more than enough, and we need to have the city of Portland be more sustainable by, instead of having the majority of the money that's supposed to be for houseless go for the middlemen to exploit the poor, to then rent it out to those who are the richer, that we need to have all of it go directly in providing housing for those who have no or low money. And so we're sustainable at the individual level, and I could give a long list of what I do and beyond better what you guys have been saying, but then more importantly, what I do when it comes to direct action, what I do when it comes to feeding the protecting the movement, what I do to bring about legislative policy, administrative changes, what I do at the corporate level, because systemic problems need systemic solutions, and we need to create the better world we want. And how we treat everyone from Afghan girls and women to indigenous peoples whose lands are being destroyed for the so-called sustainability projects, and what we need to do to protect houseless and queer people in Portland who are going to be terrorized by the incoming white supremacist terrorists. It all works together.
Well, thank you, Edie. We appreciate that zoomed out perspective. I hope you have a great rest of your day. Thanks for listening.
I love you. Bye.
If anyone else is interested in calling, talking about sustainability, sustainability practices, making little changes, give us a call, 503-231-8187.
It's, well, that was a lot. That was a lot of really great points, you know, going from like the personal accountability and direct action to what it means on us in a communal level,
mm-hmm.
especially with, you know, like mentioned the pending coming, I don't even know what to call it, the people coming to town wanting to yeah. terrorize us on Sunday, and then, you know, like the really all-encompassing kind of like Fed global point of view, mm-hmm. And yeah, it's yeah, like callers are saying, systemic problems require systemic solutions, and there are people, activists, grassroots, you know, people, grassroots members that are grassroots activists that are putting their lives on the lines. You know, mm-hmm. we just recently saw folks that were, I forgot where it was, but they were protesting, just standing, putting their bodies on the line for, mm-hmm. for you know, standing against the destruction of lands. Yeah, this is real stuff. Yeah. You know?
Well, I think it's like kind of linking the community aspect mm-hmm. of sustainability, which EU is talking about, obviously, with direct action and helping our houseless neighbors. But also what Laura was saying before about, you know, buy nothing groups and mm-hmm. communicating with people that are close to you. It's like, hey, like I bought too much spinach. Mm-hmm. And boy, do I don't want to waste it.
Does and that happens. And yeah. buy nothing. Sometimes it's like I made a little extra food. Does it, and, you know, it's again that idea of like bringing community together, like getting to know your community, getting mm-hmm. to know who your neighbor is, what their needs are, and they know what your needs are.
Yeah.
And it's a good place to start.
Yeah. People, you know, leave things out by the dumpster where I live, mm-hmm. and it's like, that is a nice lampshade. I don't think that should be in the trash. Let me secret that away.
We do have a caller on the line.
Hi, Tawassi,
you go ahead. You're live.
Oh, hi, Tawassi. How's it going?
Hi there. I'm having a somewhat challenging morning, but work can be like that sometimes.
Certainly.
I just wanted to, obviously your guys' work is awesome, but I just wanted to comment on food sovereignty and how when we have food sovereignty, it really makes a huge difference for us in our internal peace and also for the planet, which we ship food all over the place so we can have our avocado toast each morning. You know, food sovereignty is one of the first things that the federal government took from indigenous people here in the Pacific Northwest, and they continue to take it from us. So, you know, I just encourage everyone to grow a little bit of food, share it with your neighbor, and just create food sovereignty where you live.
Thank you. Yeah, I like that. One thing that I think is, like, you know, sort of related to this in thinking about food habits that a lot of people have, and it's kind of like a uniquely American thing from what I understand, is like trying to have a different type of food every night.
Mm.
It's like, oh no, we had Indian last night, we have to have Italian, or like I had pizza yesterday, I need to go have sushi now.
My mom will have a field day if she was here. She'd be like, she's eaten the same thing for like 10 years, I swear. It's
right.
Every day. Yeah.
But I think, yeah, thinking about, you know,
right, yeah,
not
and it's not sustainable.
It's not sustainable, yeah. And you know, we are very fortunate to live in a situation mm-hmm. where, you know, like a huge variety of ingredients can be at your fingertips.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, that for the majority of, you know, like most people don't live that way now or have ever lived that way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, spices were a very coveted
right.
thing. So yeah, thinking about that too, about, you know, where is the food that I'm purchasing or growing or, you know, sourcing, where is it coming from? And can I try to consume things that are closer to home when those things are in season?
Right. And there's another thing with, like, when you get more in touch with your food, you are more aware of, like, where it's coming from, who's growing it, and stuff mm-hmm. like that. And then you're also, you know, I think you get to that next level where you're able to actually, you know, have like you know, like a bell pepper, and then take a seed out and put mm-hmm. it in, you know, put it, just make it into more food, you know,
yeah.
and just like learn how to, I don't know if like communicate is the word, but like learn how, it's like a have a relationship with food that's beyond just taking, you know,
yeah.
beyond just like eating it and that's it. It's really, it's, you know, and I think that's what like sustainability is, and I think it kind of goes back to like the community aspect where it's like you are developing a relationship that's like it's helping each other. It's not just one-sided, just taking and that's it. It's taking, mm-hmm. giving, taking, giving. And it's, again, this, like, cycle of life, you know, and like, and it, you know, and it makes it sustainable.
Yeah, yeah, totally.
It's a good word.
Well, I really appreciate this conversation. Thank you, everyone who has called in, gotten some good food for thought, for sure.
no, this, I like how no, you said that. Yeah.
That was a pun unintended, but here we are. And this has been The Gap. You can always check out our website, kbu.fm/thegap, to find links related to this episode. And if you missed some of it, you can always go back and listen. Thank you so much for being with us. I'm Althea.
I am Tammy. Veteran Voice is up next. Thank you all so much for tuning in. Thank you, Sonia, for all of your help and hard work.
Stay safe this weekend, everybody.
Yes, please stay safe. We run this.
Listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM.
Hi, I'm Phil G. I'm one of the original hosts of KBOO's Grateful Dead and Friends. We're on from noon to 2 on Saturdays. All August, we're